Morning, colleagues. The Friday, so we've got to be time conscious. I assume that we all systems go. Let me take the opportunity to welcome the AG. It's always been the understanding that his deputy will hold the fort until the men in charge is able to come and talk to us in person. And now he's here and it's all yours. We have enjoyed a detailed presentation last week on the AG's strat plan for the coming period. Presentation by the DAG, and we had an engagement. We have agreed that we will continue that discussion to engage further and deeper into the issues with the AG himself. But that would afford him an opportunity to just give a strategic overview and perspective of the institution going forward, since the detail is something that we have sort of gone through with the DAG in the past week. So I'm going to allow him the opportunity, and thereafter we'll have an engagement, and then of course we can then deal with the other matters on the agenda, if that's okay with everybody. And without wasting further time, I'll hand straight to him. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues. Let me take this opportunity, Chair, to thank COWEC for having set aside time, the time to entertain and consider the detailed presentation of the flow of the strategic plan and budget of the office last week, and also for accepting in particular my apology for not making it, but also thank the DG for taking the time to really go through the matters as detailed as have happened last week. In essence, we reflected on this budget within the office, with the DG in particular, and we were happy that overall it is a representation of what the office would like to place emphasis on going forward. It indeed is a strategic focus that is retaining focus that the office has been following over the past half a decade or so, but with the emphasis and on issues that we've started to experiment with in the last year or two. And one of those things that we have started to experiment with was the increase in the focus of our performance audit, and to look at how we can use the performance audit capabilities and other specialist roles within the office, like the information system audit as well as investigation capacity, to integrate that in the work that is done within the regulatory audit, so that we can have a much more robust way of interrogating issues that we look at within the audit, the government environment, and bring on board expertise within the office that can assist the regulatory auditors to have a much more clearer insight and conclusion and analysis of the risks that government faces in the areas that we audit. So that for us is something that this strategic plan is giving greater emphasis on and saying it's something we've experimented with and something that we believe works, is something that we believe will make our auditing be a lot more relevant going forward. So, you know, there is that increase and focus on the area of performance audit and specialized audit services. The intention is to make sure that it nevertheless is not a standalone, but it's there to enhance the work and conclusions that we reach in our audit responsibilities. So I think that context is important, Chair, and maybe I can elaborate on that a little further, is that once those performance audits are done, or once the systems audits are done, or the investigations work is done, our intention is for those reports not to be once-off events that become a hype at a point in time, and they die down. Our intention is that those reports should be used by regulatory audits to continue to track, to continue to follow up on the implementation of those recommendations every year. So that's our philosophy of how this integration is meant to be done. Having given the regulatory auditors an opportunity to have an enhanced and a much more sharper focus on the things that will enhance our governance within the country. That is the one focus that we have looked at. The second area that we have looked at by way of emphasis, which we have also started to experiment with in the recent past, is the issue of the sustainability issues when it comes to the office. I mean, how do you become part of preserving the environment holistically, and start to report on those issues going forward. We started to have a reflection of that at a preliminary level in our annual report, but going forward we'd like to formalize that and have mechanisms by which we can be seen to be looking at those issues, Chair. In addition to that, Chair, there are issues that are continuing to be a challenge to us, which we would like to give them a continued focus. One of those is the issue of how do we increase the level of collection of the amounts owing to the office by the auditees. That being an issue of ongoing risk for us, we would like to intensify our engagement with the auditees. And we believe that over and above other support and other initiatives legally that are available, the strategy of visibility to the auditees and demonstrating our sincerity in doing government auditing is one of the strategies that will help us to mellow, if I can put it that way, the hard attitudes of the auditees. A good example of this, I mean, Northwest, and I've not even given this feedback in Northwest, when we had a roadshow, I think it was a week ago, with the Premier and the MECs, local government, finance, as well as the member of the legislature, Speaker and the Chair of SCOPA. I mean, the last item of discussion, we just came voluntarily, I mean, having discussed issues that had to do with the how governance and auditing can be improved within the departments in the Northwest. The MC of local government, I mean, put the subject on the table that we are aware that we are owing you a lot of money when it comes to audit fees, and to start the process to remedy that situation. And it's something that we have been considering and would like to see it being resolved in the near future. So those are some of the benefits that we're getting out of this this visibility program with auditees, which is helping us to realize that out of the difficulties that departments and provinces may be having to honor some of these fees, but they do see the benefits, and they are thinking about how they can honor these obligations that relate to our services. So I would like to put that on the table as one of the angles that ought to continue and not to be used as a lever to make people understand why our sacrifices and our efforts are beneficial to government. I think those are the issues that add on by way of emphasis. The rest we are still happy that the approach we had adopted over the past 5 or 6 or so years is still working for us. The funding model that we had adopted, we believe, is still working well for us. We believe that the margins that we've set are still appropriate. Yes, the numbers may be going up or down, but overall, the margin of around 2% overall is the margin that we believe will be sufficient for us to absorb all the risks that we may encounter in terms of running and sustaining the business. That's what the numbers essentially, as would have been discussed last week, are telling us going forward. The one other issue perhaps that I can place emphasis on, while I have the platform chair, you would be aware that one of the reasons I was not around last week was because I was busy with the road shows in the provinces. And maybe for the benefit of SCOWEC, you'd be aware that we also had a session with the National Parliament as well to reflect on the issues that need to be attended to with respect to the PFMA results going forward. And it is in this respect that, Chair, this strategic plan and this budget is also focused on intensifying those issues that we are driving with our roadshows and visibility programs. Because all this has been focused on how do we get the oversight model to work in South Africa. How do we get the executive to take accountability and ownership of good internal controls in government. And every effort that has been put on this budget is about achieving just that priority to get clean governance in South Africa, to get clean audit in South Africa. You notice that the numbers may be reflective of the heightened level of visibility by ourselves. The numbers are reflective of the heightened level of the skilling of our auditors by way of training, by way of building and intensifying our pipeline to have a continuously skilled workforce within the office. The numbers are reflective of the effort going forward to make sure that our ability to analyze the results, to analyze the root causes of the issues that prevent government from doing good work is overcome. This budget and strategic plan has got a lot to do with making sure that, ultimately, we do everything within the parameters of what we can afford, not gathering on extravagance, but what is affordable, what is within the means of doing our business. Above all, it's about making sure that the quality with which we do our work is not compromised at all. There's a lot of emphasis being put on making sure that quality assurance by ourselves, by independent scrutiny, is given prominence. And overall, to make sure that everything we do within the office administratively is reflective of us leading by example, so that at our stage, we faced with the risk of having to pronounce on government results and then to find that we ourselves in the office are not living up to those norms that you are making pronouncements on. So there's a lot of effort being put here to strengthen our systems, to strengthen our resources to be able to operate as a professional outfit. So this is overall the assumptions around which this budget and the strategic plan has been formulated and presented for your consideration. So those are the broad highlights, Jay, which I think cover a lot of what was presented in the slides and the full document that was presented to SCOVAG in the last weeks or so. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that initial succinct broad strokes contribution. Before I open the matter for discussion, I just wanted to highlight that to us, the function of the Auditor General is a lot more profound and deeper than merely performing audits on public entities. Indeed, the whole system of government, in terms of promoting its promoting good governance, you know, the principles of good governance, transparency, accountability, etc., are at the core. Is it working? It's on. My soft. The iPad moves, mics are fixed. It's just portion of the table is they should sit on the side. Should I go to the left or to the right? It depends on that. From my perspective, I'm on the left hand extreme. No, thanks. As I was saying, first, it's deeper than just performing audits annually and reporting on outcomes. It's right. The role goes to the heart of promoting good governance, accountability, and transparency, which are key principles of a vibrant modern democracy. So it's a very deep and profound kind of responsibility. And I believe that we should, as a state, maximize the gains, the benefits, of having the institution such as yourself, especially given the credibility it has managed to amass. Are we still number one spot in the world as a Supreme Audit Institution? We should keep on being reminded where we are in the global scheme of things also. And so we need to also a SCOVAG mirror that higher goal in the way in which we take your work, your product forward. And I'm saying all of this because there's a lot that's happening by way of reflection at different levels around how to improve the overall system. For example, the question of Chapter 9 institutions generally, their role, the extent to which they have been allowed the space accorded them in the Constitution to effectively play the role that's supposed to play, it's again coming up. I know that the cluster, the governance cluster here in Parliament is beginning to re-engage with the Kada Asma report and its recommendations. We deal with a number of issues, some of which are not as critical to us in this sector as they are to other Chapter 9 issues, like the funding model. Last week we did touch on that, and the DAG did indicate that there are certain exercises that have been done in the past around reviewing, evaluating the efficacy of the model in terms of its objectives and sustainability and so on, and that some of those documents could be dusted off and be brought to life again, because that Kada Asma inquiry, amongst other things, is reflecting on how Chapter 9 is funded in relation to promoting their independence, etc. And some of them have challenges which we ourselves do not have. lucky. So maybe it might be one of the good reasons why I would want to retain the existing funding model. The issue of the oversight model of Parliament and improving on that, which includes reflecting on the various committees and how they conduct oversight, starting here in Parliament, but possibly even going further down to other spheres of government. SCOPA has always raised the issue that a lot of the issues that they deal with ideally should be taken forward by portfolio committees. So the whole system and how effective it is, it's an area where we should take an interest as SCOPA to say, how does the institution of the Auditor General assist in supporting capacity building and improving our overall oversight mechanism as a parliament so that it achieves the objective that it seeks. So in other words, all I'm saying is that there are higher goals beyond just a narrow focus of the actual activity that this institution is about, namely to conduct audit. And we need to engage with those higher goals as this committee, so that when we report and recommend to our parent organization, the assembly, parent body, we are able to take the discourse to another level. But I also just wanted to ask you to take the matter further. Last week we had the presentation, which you reiterated today, where you are now working towards, if I understand correctly, the increasing integration of the audit work between not just the regulatory environment, but then bringing on board performance and investigative audits. I think we touched on that. But if it's the growth point, I think we need to get a clearer sense of how this is influenced. We understand that performance auditing is a very expensive, very capacity-involving kind of activity. What exactly are we talking about in terms of, you know, the growth that we envisage there? I know that when we visited some of your offices, Johannesburg, et cetera, Pretoria, we met with your, for example, IT audit units, who are really beginning to specialize in IT type, high-tech sort of auditing environments. How much capacity have we built there? Can we now say that every regularity audit necessarily would include that in a fully-fledged audit of information systems as well? Or is it another growth area where we are projecting? Do we have time frames by which some of these new areas of growth would have reached maturity and so on and so on? So those are just some of the broad issues that I wanted to raise at the preliminary stage. And of course, finally from my side, you talk about incorporating the new, I wouldn't say simply areas of work like environmental sustainability. Of course, there's still the other issue of promoting other goals, national goals, such as equity and black economic empowerment, etc., transforming South African society from its past legacy, etc. We did engage quite a bit on that also last week. I think you say you are a level 3 BEE compliant institution. What exactly does that entail? And so on and so on. And what is the ultimate goal? Do we ultimately, what is the highest level? Is it level 5 or is it level 1? and what is our plan in terms of getting there? So for me, those would be, so apart from environmental compliance, issues of like economic empowerment, but there could be other areas. I mean, I come from a disability conference last week in Mangaung, and you know, the issue of disability is often forgotten when we engage around issues of transformation. I'm keen to hear, as a disability rights activist, let alone everything else, what exactly you are doing in that regard specifically. But it could be other national policy goals that may not necessarily have been expressly dealt with, which you are actually engaging in to achieve compliance as an institution also with some of the policy and legislative imperatives. But colleagues, those are my bits. I don't know if I think so. Okay, should I take Honorable Quarren off first? Oh, all right. Okay, so Ms. Singh, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, AG and colleagues. I think firstly we need to appreciate the presentation by the Auditor General and his team, particularly the focus on trying to move away from, as you said, regularity to performance audits. But, Chair, you mentioned competitiveness. Yesterday we debated the competitive index report, which was compiled under the aegis of the World Economic Forum. And I said over there are very good things and there are very bad things in the report, and we need to look at both ends. But one of the very good things was that in terms of audits, out of 144 countries that were part of this process, South Africa was number one. And I think that bodes well for the audit institutions, including the Auditor General of South Africa and other audit institutions in our country. And it, you know, I think that's excellent. We can be one out of 144. But I think we need to build on that. We need to build on that in terms of the work of the Auditor General and other audit companies being translated into actual service delivery and good governance, as the AG had said. And to a large extent, that is still not happening. Because if you look at 2011, 2012 reports, I mean, there's some improvements, there's some regression. One notable regression is the Department of Home Affairs. They have regressed in terms of the kind of report. So I think the roadshows that the AG speaks about, and so I just want to engage on that. I know that you have the roadshows with the provinces and things like that, but to what extent do the people who come there have an appreciation of the role of audit and how audit can assist good governance within their respective municipalities or provincial entities or even national departments? I personally don't believe that that message is getting out there strong enough. These sessions may be around the outcome of audits, but are there sessions there in the 2 or 3 day workshop that you have that include what is audit? What are the basic things that one needs to do? Because it seems that the basics are not being complied with. That is the problem with a number of public servants. They're not complying with basics, and then that causes adverse reports, disclaimers, etc., etc. But in terms of the performance audits, I could have missed this, maybe actually what we need to know is, possibly at the beginning of a year, of a new cycle, how many performance audits would be conducted and in what arenas? So the public out there are made aware that there's going to be a report on the use of consultants, which is going to be out soon, but even before you start that. Or there's going to be a report on infrastructure like you did before. And possibly the good departments that receive unqualified with no emphasis or anything, maybe one needs to start looking at doing performance audits in those departments just as a point of departure. So you have some kind of benchmarking. I mean, yesterday we were looking at, I think it was the Public Service Commission or somebody, they did a comparison of budget and performance. Now, in the Department of Labor, they spent 99.5% of the budget for the year. That's excellent. If you look at the column only, you'll give them 10 ticks out of 10. But when it came to performance, it was 50%. So now you see there's a disjuncture there in terms of the redetermined objectives and targets and the money spent. You're spending the money, but are you achieving what the objectives are? So could you not start looking at saying next year, these are the arenas where there'll be performance audits, and maybe take one department and do that. The other area, Chairperson, is the one of the risk that the Auditor General spoke about, and he categorized it as a risk, and this is the revenue streams and the non-payment. Now, to what extent is this becoming an increasing problem where municipalities are unable to meet their commitment to paying the office of the Auditor General? Because if it's becoming an increasing problem, then maybe we need to engage as this committee moving forward on the need for government at the national level to top slice certain amounts and assist these municipalities, you know, to pay their audit fees. Because if service delivery is being compromised in some of those municipalities because they say, well, we have to pay audit fees, then something needs to be done. Because audit is not just for the municipality, it's for the country. It's for government as a whole. So I just thought if the AG or somebody can comment on that. And then my last point, Chairperson, is in communication and the role of the AG's office in terms of communicating to the public. We heard in Austria that every report is, I mean, the public are more interested than the committees. And it's public that puts pressure. But I mentioned this one example previously, AG, of a municipality that received a clean audit. And I picked up a few concerns when I was in the community, only to find that 6 or 8 weeks later or so, there was an editorial in a local newspaper saying they can't understand how this municipality received a clean audit when the performance on the ground is atrocious, to say the least. I sent the article through to the secretary, Mr. Amrock, a few meetings ago. But I think that has happened largely because these editors and the public don't appreciate the focused role of the office of the AG in these municipalities. It is regularity and not performance. And maybe this needs to be explained, you know, in greater detail as in from area to area. So just now I'll pick up on those 3 points for now, Chair. Thank you.
Anybody else? I just wanted to add a small follow-up to say, is it possible for somebody to pass a regularity audit with flying colors and fail dismally, like literally dismally, with performance audit and vice versa? But they're on that list of questions. AJ?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to acknowledge the emphasis that you put, Chair, in your commentary, and to confirm that we concur and are pleased that from scholar perspective you also see the significance of these big ticket items the way that we also see them. We are truly delighted about that. That observation. And with regard to the specific matters of clarity and further commentary that we need to provide on the interpretation of our role, let me start off with the issue of the performance audit versus regularity audit. In this regard, Chair, what we may need to do is to bring the information that we have in our internal operations, because our focus on performance audit has been increased so much in the office that we have established what we call the Performance Audit Advisory Committee, which the DAG and myself convene every quarter in the office to provide direction on, one, the coverage plan, the focus, and the priorities that need to be given towards performance audit. What I must admit we have not done, and if SCOWEC is interested in this, is to find mechanism of bringing SCOWEC into that loop as well. I'm not quite sure to what extent this needs to be extended beyond SCOWEC. But what we do though, is also consult very extensively with the portfolio committees in Parliament. We consult very extensively with the executive on any topic that, in terms of our scenario planning and risk profiling, we would have identified an area that requires to be given coverage. So we would not embark on any topic without having done that consultation extensively. And I think that consultation may have bypassed some of the members of SCOWEC on account of not being members of those portfolio committees. And perhaps to close that loop, it may be important to see how SCOWEC is brought into the picture. To what extent we then broaden that and make this a public matter? I would imagine our first attempt in this strategic plan has been a way of responding to that in terms of saying, based on our analysis, these are the audits that we are planning to conduct going forward. And if anyone has got access to our website, they will see what we plan to audit in the next coming cycle, which would be 12 to 18 months into this strategic plan. And I think it's the first time that we've done it this time around. So I think that does respond to the question of being transparent about the areas that we would like to focus on. But I must admit, the issue of how we agree and arrive at these priorities is something that we would not have involved SCOWEC in. It's something that we have taken the prerogative within the office at the top leadership to work out with the department and the regulatory audit teams within the organization. But we are more than welcome, open to appraise SCOWEC on this in whatever way that we can work out the arrangement with SCOWEC. Yeah. Now, having said that, maybe I can also touch on the issue of the distinction between, or the link between performance audit and the regulatory audit. Our regulatory audit extends into three very distinct areas: the financial scrutiny, the performance information scrutiny, as well as the compliance scrutiny. We have got this view that our auditing of predetermined objectives of government is in a way a mechanism by which we make sure that even though our performance audit may not be covering every aspect of government service delivery, through this regular and annual review of the predetermined objectives of every government department, we are in a way having a closer look at how departments are responding to the expectation of the citizens, expectation of the legislatures and oversight, and how is the administration focusing the resources towards the mandates that they are expected to fulfill for the citizens. One of our biggest observations here, which I guess is what gives rise to these issues, is that some of the questions are being raised. Many of the government departments have not as yet mastered the art of managing their budgets effectively. And the results of our performance information audits are a true reflection of this situation. And we've responded to these things in two ways. One is by commissioning a special performance audit to look into the underlying reasons for a slowdown in the effective management of performance information or budgets or predetermined objectives by government. I think that performance audit is also far advanced. It's in the process of final draft and ready for consultation and publication, I would imagine, shortly following the one on consultants, because we started that about a year and a half ago as well, if not close to 2 years ago. And we did this for the whole of government, starting from national, provincial, as well as national and sort of local government. That was the first part. The second part was to work very closely with the coordinating ministry of government, namely Presidency, Treasury, DPSA, I can't remember the fourth department that is part of that, that forum. But ultimately, this is the way of saying, how do we define the performance targets for government in a manner that is relevant, in a manner that is focused, in a manner that is clear enough for departments to never miss the their mandates as defined in their legislation and also as defined by the 12 outcomes that the presidency had outlined and tabled to Parliament as well. So that was the second intervention that we're having. And for this one, there is a regular engagement that is ongoing to make sure that once these are clarified with a lot more certainty, there is also a clear guide as to how the flow of information downwards and upwards, by downwards in terms of saying these are the regulations, these are the guidelines, and how do you then provide feedback to the coordination ministry, whether it's Treasury, whether it's PSA, whether it's all the ministries that have been given the responsibility to champion certain outcomes. How do those ministries make sure that they collect all the information on behalf of the whole of the nation in a much more meaningful way? And that exercise is still underway. No finality has been reached on it, but a lot of work has been done. And our performance audit team is heavily involved in that. Our audit research team is also involved in that heavily. So our full might of audit research and technical capability is involved with government in making sure that that area is given a lot of attention. Once again, this is something that may not have reached the site of the Parliament or SCOWEC, but it's work that we believe is important to perfect, so that these ambiguities cease to become a continuous issue that creates confusion when it comes to the budget execution in South Africa. So I thought I would cover those two issues, and both these issues are a reflection of how should we, at what point should SCOWEC be appraised of these issues? Is it while they are work in progress or when they've reached finality, you know? And I think guidance in that respect would really help quite well. Maybe I'm going to ask the DG to just give us an example, for instance, of how the integration is also working, given the current consultations with ministers and the public and the portfolio committees on the audit, performance audit that just done on consultants. But perhaps before you do that, Kimi, let me just cover the other issues. The importance of the road shows in terms of government departments and participants appreciating the issues of good governance and basics. That is a topic that is always put on the table in every roadshow that we embark upon, with the executive, with the legislators, right across all the spheres of government. And this, for us, is a platform to really showcase the analysis of the real root and of the problem, the real reasons why these basics are being neglected. And the topics and the focus that is on the table, for instance, as the recent emphasis in this road shows of skills within government, the issues of lack of checks and balances, and why that continues to be the case, are some of the issues that we believe are given a lot more prominence. But what's important about this is who takes ownership of these issues, who drives these issues, who makes sure that these things happen. That's the focus of our conversation. And the fact that we personally at the highest level of leadership in the organization, we also do this to complement the year-long engagement on these issues by our auditors on the ground, by our regions, is one of the against the visible and the live testimony of how seriously we take these issues. And we also have a clear view that this has got to continue, this has got to be ongoing. It's not going to happen overnight, but it needs effective oversight as well. Hence our reference to the oversight model to make sure that these things are done. Because it can only be, can not be only on account of the auditors saying things that change will happen. Our belief is that oversight has got to be intensified for these, for the peg to drop and for us to turn the corner. Hence, our dual responsibility to engage the executive and oversight in every roadshow that we undertake. With regard to the issue of the collection of fees, we would welcome any mechanism that will ease our burden in terms of collecting the fees. TOPS, I think would work. I know Treasury does make it. But anything that can help, we really would welcome. Yeah, but we also are addressing it in our various means. In collecting our audits. Let me just also make something here that is important. It may have been covered, it may not have been covered in terms of the discussion of the budget. This visibility program is one of the things we believe we're doing. I would say it's free of charge, but we're not charging extra for the extensive effort that we're putting to educate the government and encourage the departments to do the right things. Because belief is something that we have got a moral duty to do. And for that, we took a very clear position that we're not going to charge an extra fee for going to these municipalities, for going to these departments to engage on these issues of educating and persuading each other to do the right thing. So it's another important angle that we're putting into this issue. I think I've covered most of the one remaining issue, I guess, that I'm not sure how to handle this one. Is it possible for someone to get a clean audit but fail dismally on service delivery? Yes, it is possible. Because remember, our reports are about transparency. If someone is prepared to transparent to expose that or actually have received the money and we have returned all the money back to Treasury and have done nothing about service delivery and they're prepared to put that in their reports, there's nothing wrong about them getting a clean bill of health for being truthful and transparent and accountable. You know. And that is why in our reporting this year for the first time we are in fact highlighting that issue specifically in the emphasis of META so that it does not get missed. And we are working in the general report also have a section where we analyze the pattern of service delivery achievements by every department. To what extent have departments had 20%, 90%, 50%, 100% of the service delivery programs achieved. Just make sure that the individual emphasis in the individual report doesn't get lost in the forest. So we are going to complement that in the general report as well. Some of the portfolio committees have already picked that up and already raising issues with the departments simply because of that emphasis of META that we're putting on this issue here. Yeah. So that emphasizes the point that Honorable Singh is highlighting on proper communication of what the thing actually means. I don't think it's understood the way it's supposed to be understood. That it's about transparency, it's about accountability, it's not about whether people have achieved or deliver or not. Thank you, Chair. Can you pass on your experience of yesterday?
Thank you very much, Angie. Chair, the one point that I wanted to add as well in addition to the matter the AG referred to. In the strategic plan that we submitted on page 98, we reflect on the performance audit topics that we propose to do over the next 2 years. And in respect of the ones that we are doing now, we have been raising them there. So I think what is missing perhaps is mechanism to upload them from the report and perhaps go at a deeper level, score, which is to get a sense of how we determine the topic that we identify and all of that. But certainly we have been communicating them on all the strat plans we submitted, because those are things, as AG has indicated, that we always deciding upon before we even embark on the process of planning for the next cycle. So we will be happy to engage with the committee so that we can share with you how this is different from the other stuff that you had become accustomed to in terms of regulatory audits. And then the other one also, Jay, in respect of your specific question on matters pertaining to our plan and where we focus in our efforts around different categories of broad-based BE and many other elements of aligning to national goals. We also have it in the strat plan, and it starts getting elevated around specifics in page 99 of the strat plan. So we'll be ready to deal with you. I remember, Chair, among others, about 2 years ago when we were also engaging on the same matter, you very clearly encouraged us to focus, among others, on areas of our plan for disability and all of that. And we have it, and we always translated it into the strat plan as well. So you know, it would be good if we could get an engagement on it in the future. Chair, in terms of demonstrating the link and the expected benefit that we could realize from integrating performance audit, regularity, and information systems audit, yesterday we had an opportunity to brief the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the audit outcomes from the regularity audit, as well as work that our information systems audit has been doing across government, because you'll recall that the instrument that is used to deliver information technology services in particular in government is largely CETA, from a procurement of services and so on. So that CETA, in terms of governance and oversight, sits within the portfolio of DPSA. So we had a report that was reflecting, you see also in our general report, one of the things that we highlight very prominently in terms of the key drivers of some of these negative audit outcomes is the area of controls around the information technology environment. So here we were as a team of people from the information systems audit, as well as people on the regularity audit, which are issues that are specific to the department itself, as well as its agencies and entities. And also we had a team of people in the same meeting who were also talking to the ministry on issues that have surfaced in respect of the performance audit that we have just completed, which we are about to table, on the use of consultants. So there was clearly an integration in that meeting, in the sense that the performance audit was looking at IT procurement issues as well at the same time. So what we realized is that it will make a lot of sense if all three of those teams, when they report to a ministry like that, they go there with one page of issues, because all these things are complementary across government. So that was one example of what we have started doing, and we are starting to see the benefit of it, because now it's not going to be a case of each of the teams looking at things separately, but whatever we pick up on the performance audit, we will make sure that the regulatory auditors, when they do their annual audit, keep it as one of the items of oversight. When the information systems audit does a comprehensive information systems review in government, those issues that are highlighted are kept on the same data check, so that the oversight in the ministry can focus broadly on all the issues in government, whether they have to do the procurement of services from a performance auditing perspective, that is the economy, the efficiency, and the effectiveness at which these resources are procured, or whether it is about being transparent on reporting on their own information, as well as whether they do have the security systems in place in the information systems that are either used in parliament or are used in departments, because effectively they are procured through a CETA environment, and DPSA is responsible for that area in terms of oversight of government. So that was, to us, a large example of what sort of benefits could be derived if you look at it from three angles. Now let me use another generic example, Chair, to also build on the other question that the AG was talking to regarding the link, possibly, between regularity and performance audit. And if I look at it in the form of a regularity audit, yes, it's possible somebody, when they see our report as annotated as a clean audit, while their own experience is that of not getting the services that they expect, because when we look at it from a regularity audit, we go and insert the invoice, and we find that the invoice is represented by a process that was transparent in terms of procurement, and that if they were purchasing a tractor, that the tractor is available and we can see it. So from that point of view, there's nothing that has been broken. Procurement was done properly, it was accounted for in terms of the reporting transparently, and it exists. On the other hand, when we examine that same tractor from an economy, effectiveness, and efficiency point of view, if it only goes to one village instead of 20 villages as planned, then that member of the community will feel that this clean audit report that was issued does not make sense, because until we examine the effectiveness and efficiency from a performance audit point of view, only then will we be able to see whether this tractor goes to 1 or 20 villages. And that is why we think that it is important to accelerate the development of performance audit, so that we can begin to examine issues in addition.
Or it simply goes to a mayor's farm.
That type of stuff. Performance audit is what is going to allow you to see behind the scenes what happens to this tractor. Does it really go until the land is promised? Is the plan that gets reported in the annual report reflecting the fact that it actually services 25 communities instead of one or two? That is what we think the performance audit acceleration will help in understanding why the member of that community has got price with a clean audit. So, Chair, from that point of view, we think that it's worthy pursuit. In fact, we have set our target to be about 10% of our resources over at least the next 3 to 5 years to grow into the performance audit. Not to go away from regularity. We still do regularity as a matter of fact, but a lot more focus will also be given to performance audit so that we can start really at a deeper level and start seeing the complete picture in terms of the experience of the person who thinks that clean audit is something that's a pie in the sky. We can be able to say, we understand why you don't believe this clean audit. Thank you, Chair. I thought I would add that angle to it. And our plan that we have drafted, as well as the work that we are busy analyzing now in terms of performance audit, is an attempt to gear ourselves towards that area. We also recognize also in the threat plan, if I may just use this opportunity to indicate to ourselves that in order to get to that level, in order to get to that aspiration of 10% over the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to have to invest in reskilling and attracting people who have got specific insight in the areas that you're choosing to do work on. If, for example, our focus is going to be, as we suggest in the plan, to evaluate things like the school feeding scheme program within the area of education, or if we look at the Khan Khude program, which is part of the programs that are under basic education, we would need somebody who's got deeper insights in that area so that we can complement with our existing skills those specific issues, because now we're going to be starting to pronounce on whether these programs are being delivered as designed and as effectively as expected. So that's one area that we've built on in terms of our investment in the plan, to say the variety of interactions with even industry entities. We don't necessarily have to bring them on board into our ranks because they may be expensive, but we must start partnering with those institutions that can help us develop understanding of some of the specific sector issues in performance audit. So it's going to be a journey of growth and development, certainly in that area, Chair. And in the past, we've always done it largely on a combination of a proactive and reactive basis. But we are now saying that it's time that we intensify the proactive level of engagement with performance audit, because there's a potential value that we could use to accelerate even clearance on some of the issues that are stuck around the area of regularity audits. Thank you.
Yes, AG, and then I'll recognize.
Got it. Just to build on what DG has said on the role of performance audit, and this is where I would like to make a plea ready to the parliamentarians to help bridge the gap between the capacity to cover performance audits and the ability of the state to utilize the budget effectively. And this is where really we would like to make sure that at the level of Parliament, when we look at these performance targets, performance priorities, performance direction of the budget, that is given clear focus at the level of the legislatures. Because the reality that we face is that departments can easily say, as Kimi says, we buy one tractor, we're gonna go and utilize tractor to plow one farm. Now, when Parliament approves that budget for department, that's what Parliament would like that budget to fulfill. Because if a department has done that, and our audit coverage in terms of performance information confirms that indeed the tractor has been able to plow a farm, that audit is going to get a green light because they've done what Parliament has approved the department to do. And that's the reality that we face in terms of collaborating to make sure that the expectation of your representatives in terms of citizens are not given a deal by having irrelevant and inappropriate priorities for the use of the budget. I just thought I should emphasize that point as well. Because that 10% is never going to cover the whole of the budget of the state.
But of course some of these things are couched in high-flying language, which some of us politicians who are not technical might think it means a lot of big things when it actually means very little. But Honorable Korinoff?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to prolong the discussion, but I am a little bit concerned, you know, when the AG states here, and that's a fact, that many of these government departments doesn't know how to utilize their budgets effectively. Now, trying to assist that is going towards a performance audit era. Now, my question is, if we double the budget of the AG, will you be able to do more performance audits, or is there another constraint with regard to that? Because it doesn't make sense for us then not to spend more money, you know, on the AG if they have to do that. The other problem is the AG is unfortunately the messenger of bad news. You know, clean audits becomes now, clean audits should be, you know, the benchmark. You cannot stand up in Parliament and say, give me a hand clap because I've got a clean audit. You should get a clean audit. It should be the benchmark, full stop. But it's not becoming the benchmark in our government, unfortunately. So if you do a performance and you see this department is basically dysfunctional, what are you doing about it? You can't do anything about it. So it becomes so troublesome. Even in some instances where people don't want to have consultants. But if you take the consultants away, nothing is happening there. So I don't know, you know, I sit on a finance committee and I pray every day for Praveen Gordhan. But if the departments is not going to assist and the AG and everybody is not going to assist the Treasury, we are just going one way and that is down. Now, I want more from the AG. You must either tell the Treasury or tell us if we brought the bad news, the clear audit departments are, because of our performance audit, not functioning. What are we doing? Where's the fix team? I know it's not your job, but imagine if you bringing us that news on top of the regulatory audits. It's not going to picture a very, very good story for this country, and that's my concern.
You know, there are a lot of anecdotal issues which may sound trivial, but they go to the heart of some of these challenges, oversight, effective oversight, performance, and so on. Just to cite one or two, I mean, a colleague you know, gets appointed to the executive, and the day he steps into the office, he finds very old, rugged, scratched furniture, and he says, but this the furniture that's provided, and the officials say, of course, we can get new furniture. Then they go with you, you point the furniture you think would be reasonable for your office, and they say, of course, everything is fine. And then a week or two later, the Minister of Public Works phones you and says, comrade, how could you order furniture worth so many millions? And you say, but the furniture I pointed to the officials wouldn't cost anything close to 200,000 rands. And in the meantime, they presented a requisition for over a million, close to a million. So the point I'm really trying to point out is that we tend to think as politicians that we are on top of things, but officials always outsmart us. They always have a way of going around this. And I understand the buzzword is that even if there are limits on your treasury or finance handbook or whatever, everything can be bypassed by way of motivation. Officials are very good at drafting things called submissions, you know, where they write some very nicely worded, submission to motivate for something, when in essence all it is pulling wool over your eyes and pursuing something completely, off. And of course, when the popper hits the fan, the newspapers point the political head and say his head was wrong. So I don't know, how do we overcome some of these challenges? Officials come to your portfolio committee. I used to chair a portfolio committee myself. They come with a thick, glossy document full of all kinds of so-called high-level talk, and you are looking at the document for the first time as it's being presented. How do you effectively engage and so on and so on? But also to say that the things of quarterly reports and so on, things that are tools that can enable you to track things throughout the year. I mean, have we developed the capacity in Parliament, in portfolio committees, to do this? And shouldn't we actually be saying that the institution has a pro forma program that applies to all portfolio committees, that says in your program every quarter there has to be a spending item on 1, 2, 3, 4, and it doesn't matter which other work you do, but come the end of a quarter you need to receive the quarterly report, you need to interrogate it, and you need to make findings on that quarterly report. Stuff like that. Can't we assist each other in facilitating the development of a set of proposals that are pithy, succinct, necessary? I mean, I like, for example, when we do the oversight visit with your officials from your offices, they have a template that has a list of, if you like, compliance or areas where the audit is going to focus on, you know? And it's simple, easy stuff that even, you know, a dunk-up like me can follow. You know, you don't have to be an accountant to understand what the AG actually requires you to do in order to produce a clean audit. So what beats me is, with all the simple stuff and still getting such high levels of non-compliance, what else needs to be done? Is it deliberate? Is it too much turnover of stuff in key positions in government? And finally, you know, it seems as if it's more rewarding to get a disclaimer than to get a disqualified audit. Because you see, a disclaimer simply buries everything. Nobody gets fired, there's no consequence. And then next year, if you like, you could see if you can comply or not. If you think it's not going to be possible to comply, you get another disclaimer, you know, easy. Then it's gone, it's buried, you know, let's wait for another year. And so it goes. How do we overcome this? What are the concrete steps that we can take where if there is a disclaimer, it's not just a by the way issue? And this thing sometimes gets so frustrating. But colleagues, let's get other contributions. Yes, Honourable Stenezi.
Yeah, Dickerson, thank you. I think you make a very good point, and I think this is probably something which we're going to have to grapple with. Now, I know I asked the AG about 5 to 6 meetings ago about what he intended to do about it, and he turned around and said, well, it's not what I intend to do, but what you intend to do about it. And, you know, he made it very clear that, you know, that he provides the snapshot, and, you know, we are then required as Parliament to take action. Now, I'll tell you something even more shocking, is that I put some questions to the Cocktail Minister around performance bonuses. And I can get you anything you like, that when the figures come back, many of these municipalities where this claim was received, there were municipal managers and senior managers who received performance bonuses, which to me is even more concerning because it speaks to the AG's point about lack of consequences. But I think, Chair, you in a nutshell have captured the essence of the problem. And that's that the AG report gets chucked between Treasury, between us, between SCOPA, between COGTA, and probably the Public Service Commission. And I think it's essential that somebody actually takes responsibility now for it. Because as you said, you know, a lot of the municipalities are becoming immune to this now. It's one day of bad headlines for them, and they go in peace and sin no more. And, or we hope at least. And so, you know, yeah, well, it'd be nice if they didn't sin no more. Unfortunately, most of them are sin, carrying on their sins. Because, as I said, one day of bad headlines, and there's no consequences. And so, you know, I did discuss this two or three meetings ago, said that we need to actually have a parliamentary joint committee. I don't know whether we bring all COGTA, we bring Treasury, we bring us, we bring SCOPA together, to start looking about how we can actually introduce these consequences which you speak about. Because it's going to have to be a multi-agency approach. And SCOPA, we don't really have powers in municipalities that COGTA does, in terms of interventions and setting regulations, etc. The Minister's busy now with regulations in terms of the Systems Amendment Act. And perhaps maybe now is the time to jump in now and start putting in consequences for municipal managers and others for municipalities to receive bad audits. But, you know, I just don't want us to be, you know, be sitting again next year, you know, the same picture presented, hopefully better, hopefully not worse, where, you know, there's been the same municipalities, repeat offenders. You know, and if you look at the local government audit results, there's some municipalities just haven't bothered to submit financial statements for three audit periods. And, you know, you wonder how the political leadership and the executive leadership in those municipalities is allowed to simply continue without those consequences. So I think we need to have a national summit on consequences convened by Parliament in terms of how we're actually going to now get around this problem. Because until people start to feel it in the pocket, and they start to see that these things can be career-limiting, we're going to end up with, I'm afraid, a similar worse picture next year.
And is it so that the idea out there has become, I mean, an epidemic that if the books don't balance, we'll burn them. If the computers don't, you know, tell the story that you'd prefer them to tell, you know, clean up the hard drive and buy new computers that would tell the story you want to tell. Was there somebody else who wanted to, or should I? All right. AG, just want to comment on some of these thoughts.
Thank you, Chair. Quite diverse views and observations, but the maybe one way of responding to this is by first explaining what it is that we are doing about these issues, and hopefully put a compelling case that we have done enough for the rest of the governance players to pick up the issue and do something about these matters. Let me start with the issue of, for instance, putting together the priorities for effective use of the scarce resources of government. The
reason we are putting a lot of effort with all our technical specialism with the Treasury Presidency, DSA, COFTA, is to make sure that there's no ambiguity around how the issues are managed, streamlined, and guidance provided to the whole of government. Because we have identified that the reason every government, almost every government department gets a bad report in this area is because of the lack of clarity on how this should be reported, coordinated, and presented across the reporting chain at the level of the ministries. And obviously, if it's not clear at the level of the ministry, it's going to be worse in terms of how it gets presented to Parliament to make sure that there is simplicity. You mentioned, Chair, the presentation of complicated policy documents. How should these things be presented so that they're not inconsistent and even worse, confusing to the parliamentarians who are supposed to approve these priorities and this budget? That's the first issue that we have attempted to do. But while that process is in place, what we have identified and would like to suggest to pilot this year is to audit, and in fact this has been piloted by the Portfolio Committee on Communications last year, to bring forward the audit of the performance information and strategic plans to make sure that at least the issue of usefulness and relevance is looked at before the approval of the budgets in February or March of the following year. So that if there's anything that can be picked up there, at least that is so glaring and so blatant, it can be fixed before it is too late. And we also recognize that the audit is not a better instrument to pick up the flaws of government assets. But at least you can look at things that are so glaring, but it cannot be guaranteed to pick up every fault in those budget and strategic plans. Okay. But what it will do is it will eliminate the passing of inappropriate strategic plans, inappropriate budgets that are not consistent with the prescripts of the Treasury guidance. Yeah. But when it comes to the issues of deeper analysis of relevance, the audit can never be a remedy to pick that up. And hence, it is important, therefore, if at a portfolio committee level, parliamentary level, there can be some complementarity with that role. I must be quick to say it's not going to be possible to do it for all the departments this year, but it's something that we want to pilot so that we can then plan even our own timetable along those lines. And hopefully in that way we can mitigate the risk of these ineffective budgets being executed by the departments. I'm also saying this to also welcome, I mean, every effort to increase the person's budget of the office, but also to say that it's something that if it is done, we need to find a way of saying if the person's audit budget is enhanced, how do we approach performance audits so that we get more value for that effort? You know, so we need to find smart ways to make sure that we don't approach the performance audit in a narrow way. You know, and therefore the choice of performance audit topics is going to be very, very strategic to make sure we look at the issues that affect government holistically, and then over time and make sure that those efficiencies are perfected. Over time, we can start looking a lot more narrow, but knowing that the broader base of government effectiveness has been covered. All right. So that's what we plan to do, and I'm sure there will be many other thoughts, I mean, going forward in terms of our innovation on how we can help to contribute in this respect. But what we will never be able to do, and what we are encouraging, is that the running of government is the responsibility of the executive of government. And it's for that reason that in this roadshow, our greatest issue of emphasis is to highlight all those things that the executive is committing to do, which gives rise to all the surprises at the time of the audit.
And if everyone can then emphasize on putting a lot more emphasis on the assurance by the executive, we will eventually get the governance of the country on a better platform. The second issue that is important here is to also identify, and this is what I'm emphasizing with this roadshow, the role of the coordinating ministries, the treasuries, the caucus, the presidencies, and every other ministry at DPSA that is coordinating the efficiency and effectiveness and clarity of practices across government, and make sure that their own performance priorities and targets and determined objectives are clear on how they're going to fulfill that responsibility. Because we've also picked up that that's an area that is very loose. All these departments are doing the best they could, but there's no measure that is focusing on how they are channeling their direction and their resources towards their primary mandate of improving government effectiveness. And in this respect, our intention is to make sure that we have a collective effort, nationally and provincially, to make sure that there is a clarity and uniformity in the way which all these departments, nationally and provincially, are dealing with that issue. It's something that is emerging out of these roadshows, which we'd like to button down quick enough so that in the next audit cycle, this issue is also dealt with. Because that is another important layer of assurance, to make sure that when Treasury is supposed to monitor certain things, that they monitor those things, they report on those things, so Parliament and legislatures can respond to those matters. Now, when you receive a report from Treasury, for instance, is there anything that talks to their role vis-a-vis the enhancement of governance by the whole of government? You know, when you look at the report of COCTA, for instance, the profiling of what cities that they report on, when you look at the report of DPSA, you know, so those are the issues that we're looking at working on to make sure that those departments are focusing on that mandate that they have to improve the whole of government effectiveness. So, Chair, colleagues, these are some of the initiatives that we're trying to dissect and unpack to make sure that we simplify and encourage the implementation of the legislative requirements of government. Now, the other players, that is internal audit and audit committees and oversight and scopers, you name it, they come right at the tail end of the process, because these are all the players that, unless things are done properly by the people that are in the front line, there's no way that things will be fixed. And that's why these players have therefore need to have, and that's once more another emphasis in the roadshow this year, have got to make sure that when we do our oversight, we don't focus on peripheral superficial issues. We focus on the core of what is continuing to break the and compromise and dilute the effectiveness of governance. Our report can one reference point, but it cannot be the sole reference point. But I just hope, Chair, that this focus can be directed towards the people that it needs to be directed towards the executive. And I guess we're coming back once again to the issue of how to get the oversight model to work effectively. But it can work effectively focusing on the right things, and we insist on those things, and we focus and stay on those things until they come right. Yeah. Maybe lastly on the issue of consequences. One of the issues we intend doing, and we're not sure if we're gonna perfect this, is just to look at what are the enabling legislative and regulatory prescripts that are there in our legislation and regulations that we are utilizing or that we are not utilizing. Because I mean, every time we come to this issue of consequences, talk about it in generic terms. We're not saying this is a thing that is available for us to do and we are not using.
So I think it's important that we analyze every other prescript that is there that will enable government to deal with issues of consequences. Consequences a lot more sharper. If we don't succeed in this analysis, which was also picked up as an issue when we had a meeting, for instance, with the Minister of Finance as well as Public Health Administration, we'll attempt it maybe in the next reporting cycle. But we're going to give it a fresh shot and our first attempt in this general report, so that at least we have a something that we can use as a baseline that says, we all talk consequences, but we're the first culprit not to use what is at our disposal to actually make these consequences come to. Thank you, Chair.
Colleagues, we can go on and on these issues, express our frustrations. What remains is what do we do taking the work forward? Obviously, from our perspective, some of these issues will have to come manifest themselves sharply in our report and recommendations to Parliament, and hopefully they can be taken forward further there. But also we need to start exploring interface with other like-minded, fellow structures and colleagues, so that, because I'm sure this issue, we're not the only ones that are grappling with, there are many others. Public service, COCTA, etc. So we need to find a way where we can collaborate, come together, and reinforce each other. But clearly, things like disclaimers and the worst forms of audit outcomes must be wiped off the face of the earth, like other diseases in this world that have since been wiped off. And we're hoping that more diseases, more pandemics will be wiped off in this world, including disclaimers. Colleagues, I think that as far as we take the strat plan, is a document that has been prepared by the research unit, which is an attempt to do some kind of analysis. It probably may need to be beefed up further with some of the engagements that have developed today. I don't think we'd be in a position to consider it today. However, there are other documents before us. The discussion and adoption of our report on the annual report, yes.
I was just wondering if we should not excuse the AG and others.
Oh, yeah.
So that we can continue. I know they have lots of work to do.
Yes.
I don't know if we need them anymore, but we can continue. Or we'll have a small comfort break and then carry on after that.
Yeah. Just to indicate that the principle really is that even though the leadership in the AG's office is excused, we do prefer to have some residual presence at all our meetings, because not only are they open, but we prefer a closer working relationship. So whatever we do, whether in an observer capacity or to monitor with a view to providing, instant assistance and support as we go along and deal with issues, we usually prefer to have some minimal kind of presence, even if it's just us who are together. But other than that, AG, you liberty, if you have to rush off, we'll have a short comfort break, but you are equally welcome to personally be present if circumstances allow you. All right, let's have a 10-minute tea break.
Is it tea break?
All right. And then we can deal with the other report. Thanks.